Let the word go.
The
first.
Challenge, the opportunity to connect. The 1960s, a time of imagination and change, a time of anger and fear. The 1960s is a pioneering program called Challenge.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
That looked at our connections, our divisions, through the lens of shared values.
With something real.
60 years later, we examine our divisions, our connections, our shared pains and successes in a new program called Challenge 2.0. Last week, we began a conversation examining the force of white Christian nationalism in America, how it conflicts with the essence of Christianity, and in fact, the motto found on coins, E Pluribus Unum, out of many, one. We continue our discussion this week with the author of the new book, Go and Do Likewise, and how we can counter efforts to divide and dehumanize some Americans. So in picking up our conversation from last week, we're pleased again to have with us Reverend Terry Kylo, Executive Director of Paths to Understanding, and also the author of a wonderful book, Go and Do Likewise. And it is a wonderful compendium, not only of the problems we're facing, but some potential solutions, particularly in this area that we've seen really a rise of white Christian nationalism. Yes. And I'd like to begin this week's conversation, if I can, that there seems to be some very practical issues with the emphasis on whiteness. That doesn't seem to describe who our biblical leaders really were. You look at Jesus, you look at throughout the Jewish Bible and the New Testament.
Right.
We don't see any Caucasian people in that until you introduce the Romans. Is that right. An accurate statement?
Yeah, so look, I've learned from Rabbi Yohanan Kinberg and Danny Wiener and other imams, right? Religion is in part, a wisdom tradition is about training us to be human in real life.
Right.
And the second thing that's important about that is that we need training as human beings. Because human beings, we're more built on associations. Our actions are built more on associations than they are logic. You know, sometimes we make a decision based on our in-group or our associations with someone, and then we backfill with some logic, right? And so it's really a challenge for Christians who see depiction after depiction of a northern white European Jesus and Mary with blue eyes and blonde hair. And, you know, it's always so funny to me because, you know, Jesus was a Middle Eastern person. He was a Middle Eastern Jewish person. And, you know, if he was that white, his first miracle wouldn't have been like water into wine. It would have been like olive oil, you know, into sunscreen.
Yeah.
You know, it just doesn't make any sense. So I think it's appropriate that people all over the world, you know, depict Jesus and Mary and Joseph the way they see themselves. But the problem is that this issue of the image of Jesus being primarily white within white churches, it doesn't like create everything, but it is an example of, and it creates a kind of association, and it develops a kind of bias that somehow white people are closer to the divine, have more status than others. And that's really dangerous. And so just this last Sunday, I was at a church in Everett, and they have a beautiful display of images of Jesus and Mary from around the world, Japanese, from Africa, you know, from Russia, you know, from everywhere really in the world, indigenous and on and on. And those are really powerful because they really help train our association of God being near and loving every form of human being on this beautiful planet. And it helps to train us differently. And so I think clergy, theologians, biblical scholars, and everyday Christians need to be on the lookout for the way that we're kind of training our biases and our bigotries with our images and our languages, a language about things, so that we can train ourselves what the Abrahamic tradition is really teaching us is in the humanity of every person.
You've used some terms, and not just in the book, but elsewhere,
of
in-group and confirmation bias. I think for the benefit of people that don't know those, that are not familiar with those, and even for some of us that think we know them but probably don't, could you unpack that a little bit for us?
Yeah, sure. So when I was a little kid, we were Lutheran. And I remember very distinctly that one of our cousins was considering marrying a Catholic. And that was a big deal because we didn't really hang out with the Catholics any. So that's called in-group bias, that we tend to think that the people in our culture, in our in-group, are better. And what can happen with it very quickly is that it goes from better for us or good for us into better than others. And that's where in-group bias can become exclusive in-grouping. And I do think that as a pastor, I noticed that it's easier to build a sense of community against others than it is to build a sense of community and deep values from within. And I think many, many leaders in the United States built on like the centuries of white Christian nationalism sense that they can make more money, they can have more followers, they can make their Learjet, you know, happen. If they, or Gulfstream, I should say, these days, right? And they can make that happen better if they talk against another group. And I've seen that happen over and over again. And so that's where in-group bias, our comfort with our own group, becomes something much more toxic, exclusive in-grouping. So confirmation bias really is that human beings, when we have a set of associations about another group or about a topic or an issue, we'll make kind of a gut reaction to that. Jonathan Haidt talked about that in some of his books. And then what happens is that after we've made a decision in our brain, very often on a gut level, after we take some kind of action or we speak about it, we then want to backfill that decision and that sense of ethics with logical thought. But we didn't actually arrive at it logically. We are sort of using logic to defend it. And that same sort of thing happens in groups that use violence around the world. Studies show that people who engage in terroristic activities, who are part of non-governmental actors, will often claim that their actions were divinely inspired and divinely blessed. And this is where I think people of wisdom traditions have to be so careful. Because it's one thing to read a message from the divine, from the scripture, from some other text. It's another thing to assume that, to use the text basically, or use our tradition only to confirm our current view of things. And this is where we get into trouble with what the Bible calls idolatry. That is claiming that we're right, we're the good ones, our system is perfect pretty much, and God's behind it. And yet in the Hebrew tradition, we saw that part of their tradition was the prophetic tradition. People that were called out, you know, maybe from some rural area to come into the city and say, hey, all y'all, you are falling short of the values of our tradition, and we need to take some time and reconsider how we are living this out. And I think Christians are in a time right now of deep reconsideration of our own tradition. What was it that Jesus was inviting us to do and to be about in the world? And when I talk with people about that, you know, I'll say, well, are there any hymns we don't want to sing anymore, you know? And one of them is Onward Christian Soldiers.
Right.
We don't want to sing that song. And I had one woman once say, you know, well, wait, I remember singing that song with my grandparents. Are you saying my grandparents are bad? And I said, heavens no. But understand that Jesus and the entire Jewish tradition and Islamic tradition, we use the tradition to critique the tradition. We try to understand the heart of it, and then we look at the way we're living it out. And so I believe that your grandparents and you had a wonderful moment, and that God was part of that. But I also know that, you know, part of what God does with us is help us overcome our confirmation bias, to see things in a new way. And part of the reason we can do that, Jeff, is in the Christian tradition, is that we know that God loves us as we are. And so when we're loved as we are, we can change, because our identity, our value is not based on being right about something. And actually, the deepest form of trust that I think Christians can have right now is the experience of being disoriented within our own tradition a bit, and trusting that God will hold us up and God will love us in the middle of that and will help us come out to a deeper way, a more faithful way to see Jesus and to follow him.
There's a general conception of you begin with order, you go to disorder, and then you reorder.
And Walter Brueggemann, a wonderful Presbyterian biblical scholar, applied that to baptism, for Christian baptism. And so at the very center of baptism is the idea that we're beloved of God as we are. but that God consistently leads us through life to recognize that we're seeing the world in a way that's not totally helpful. Mm-hmm. Our actions are not really contributing to peace. And to go through a period of like disorientation and sort of not sure about how we understand things. We're kind of confused. And that's hard for humans mm-hmm. because we're anxious beings. But we can remember and breathe and through the middle of that, that we're loved as we are. And then we can come to a new way to see things. Our indigenous neighbors always have this beautiful saying that it takes a long time to grow a human being. Mm. And I remember Father Tracy, 3 weeks before he died, I went out to visit him, and he was sitting there reading a book, and he was totally changing in his mind what he thought about a topic.
Yeah.
And man, that's what I want to be. I want, until I'm 3 weeks before I die, I want to be like Father Tracy, and I want to be changing how I see things because the Creator loves me as I am and is calling me to become even more human.
And we should point out that Father Tracy was 103 at yes. that point. So hardly stuck in his ways
yes.
and hardly drawing into himself. Yes. He was continuing to expand. And we see that with so many people
yes.
in faith that we've had the privilege of coming to know.
Yes.
Let's turn on to how we respond to this.
Sure.
Let's look at some of the themes of your book,
yeah.
Go and Do Likewise. So in terms of looking at that phrase, which yeah. comes from Jesus,
yes.
what does that call for us to do?
Yeah, so many of us know the story of the parable of the Good Samaritan.
Mm-hmm.
And that story kind of tells us a moral, right? That we should be nice to other people. We should risk ourselves for other people like the Samaritan did. But we don't always understand that Samaritans and Jewish people in Jesus' day really were at odds.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were walking through Samaria and you're a Jewish person, when you left Samaria, you would knock the dust off your feet because that whole region was unclean. I mean, that's kind of dehumanizing, right? And so when Jesus was asked the question in a debate, theological debate, who is my neighbor?
Mm-hmm.
He was really being asked, who can I exclude from being my neighbor?
Mm-hmm.
Who's not really human that I don't have to love or care about, and I don't have to behave differently in order for them to thrive, right? And so Jesus tells a story not about how Jewish people should be nice to Samaritans. He told a story about how a Samaritan had the humanity, because of his tradition, because of his family, because of his community, to risk himself on behalf of a Jewish person. And in that moment, Jesus is speaking well of a dehumanized group.
Mm-hmm.
So we get the moral of the story, but we often forget, you know, Jesus' methodology,
mm-hmm.
that he is trying to speak about a group that's been dehumanized in a positive way. And so he is inviting us to risk ourselves as he risked himself, because Jesus did himself no favors with his community when he spoke well of that group, of that Samaritan. He did himself no favors at all. He lost followers
mm-hmm.
Because of that exclusive in-grouping that was going back and forth between the two. And so Jesus was not only willing to speak well of Samaritans, as he did in that instance, but he went out and visited with Samaritans.
Mm-hmm.
He stayed in a Samaritan village, and he helped his own people and Samaritans to recognize their common humanity, and he did that through relationship. And that's where I think we need to be right now,
mm-hmm.
Jeff.
Yeah.
So right now, I believe that the strategy of Jesus to help us overcome exclusive in-grouping and dehumanization and the violence that it leads to
mm-hmm.
is for us to get to know each other and to publicly relate and honor with each other. And that same wisdom really came out of a whole series of conversations for me during COVID.
Mm-hmm.
I was sitting there with a Zoom account, trying to figure out, you know, how to handle this time when we can't do as much in the world. And I talked to people from atheists to Zoroastrians mm-hmm. and everything in between. I asked, hey, what do you see happening in our culture? And they all agreed that we're too divided, we're too polarized, we're making our identity about things that don't matter. I asked them, why do people do this?
Mm-hmm.
And they all mentioned, you know, that we get attached to our own in-group and we think we're right, we get confirmation bias and we can't ever change, have a hard time changing. But then I asked a third question, what do we do about it? What's a strategy
mm-hmm.
that your tradition teaches about how we can get through a time like this? We can't just sit in our houses and expect it to go away. We got to do some things. And out of that grew a real strategy. And out of those conversations, I began to see Jesus differently too. And that strategy was simply to eat and share stories.
Mm-hmm.
No politics, no policy debates, right? Just see each other as people. Number two, to benefit the community together. And then number three, to honor each other in public. Mm-hmm. And so you and I and the staff and the board began to think about how can we operationalize this? And eventually we came up with this program called Let's Go Together, which is a way to sort of help people find those connections across lines of tradition and culture and life circumstance, mm-hmm. and come together around food and to see each other as people, to do a service project together. And the studies show that when people do those kind of things, they share it with on average of 20 people apiece. Mm-hmm. And then the third event will be an event at the Lincoln Theater, in which we're going to be bringing all these leaders of different traditions together to share why their tradition teaches them mm-hmm. to honor all people as human. And so, and then that got me thinking about Jesus again. He said, love your enemy, pray for those that persecute you, do good to those who harm you. Mm-hmm. Well, wasn't that a strategy? That may be a strategy that some Christians think is silly or is powerless, but actually it's the most powerful strategy in the world. Mm-hmm. So right now, it's not so important that we get our theology straight, although I think that's important work to do. What's more important right now for people of all wisdom communities is to realize that they have power in this moment. And that power isn't just the power to think or pray. Those are really important. It's the power to relate publicly across lines of difference. And when they do, their whole community is going to like take a sigh of relief. I went to the Seroptimists a couple weeks ago, and I saw a woman there I knew. I told her about Let's Go Together and this process that we're engaging in. And you know what she did? She just took a deep breath. She went, oh, thank God someone's doing that. Mm-hmm. The deep relief that happens when they see leaders in the community who hold their tradition like with honor and who love being Christian or Muslim or Hindu or Buddhist or atheist or whatever. They hold those traditions so deeply, but when they see us relating across those lines, it's a symbol mm-hmm. that the white nationalists don't have to win. And just as Jesus said, we don't have to live this way anymore, friends. We can see each other as human. Well, we're trying to lift up the wisdom of all kinds of traditions mm-hmm. to say that we do not have to live divided. But to do that, we're going to have to do something that you know is going to be a little bit hard, but we also know how to do, and that's to unleash the power of the potluck.
Right.
We know how to get people
together.
Which
we have a tradition of here in Native cultures.
Yes.
In the Northwest. Let me just ask you this, and to just sort of take a pause and give a foundation for this. Some people might say, well, this sounds great, mm-hmm. and Terry has had some positive experiences with this. Yeah. We've seen how this works before on an individual basis, and I'm thinking in Germany and in Russia, and I'm thinking also in Hawaii during the Second World War. Maybe, because I know you're familiar with those, could you share a couple of those examples with us?
Right. So first of all, one of the deep critiques on behalf of theologians, Christian theologians, about the Holocaust, mm-hmm. was that there was not only in-group bias and dehumanization of our Jewish neighbors, against our Jewish neighbors, and violence toward them, and that the church participated in that, but that Christians just didn't hang out with Jewish people. Mm-hmm. They just didn't know them. They didn't see them as someone that they should relate to. And so, like, when you don't know someone, you know, you believe all the negative news. Mm-hmm. And right now, we are so isolated in this country, too. Going around Skagit County, I heard person after person say, you know, we know people who are Catholics, we know people who are Lutherans or whatever, but the groups don't relate.
Right.
It's almost like the groups are segregated. And so I heard this most powerfully from a formerly incarcerated man mm-hmm. named Tony, who's a beautiful human being. I mean, I love Tony. And he said, Terry, we are completely separated. And that means that all the negative news from social media and other sources from political figures can really grab a hold of us. But, you know, Tom Maketa, who we've had on the show before and who I deeply respect and admire, told me the story about how in Hawaii, the executive order to establish internment camps or mm-hmm. concentration camps for Japanese Americans, it didn't happen there. And the reason it didn't happen is because everybody had cross-group relationships between Hawaiians, you know, Americans, and Japanese Americans there. And so when the order came down, a bunch of people in the community, leaders, walked up to the commander of the military and said, you can do a lot of things here, but you can't do that. Mm-hmm. There's not going to be an internment camp here because we're not going to go along with it. And that shows, like, I think, the power of those kind of relationships, which are always imperfect and messy, but it shows the power of that to help us recognize each other as human.
As we've mentioned in the introduction, you serve as Executive Director of Paths to Understanding. Yeah. You've alluded to some of how this fits in with that, but give us a broader sense of that.
Well, you know, one of the questions that we need to respond to is you know, why is an interfaith organization and the Executive Director writing a book about, you know, helping Christians understand how interfaith work, how multicultural work is really important. But my response is this, that we live in a country that is really deeply formed by the Christian tradition, whether it's distorted or not, like Christians are the majority. And right now we need people of all wisdom traditions to be on the playing field, in relationship, publicly honoring each other and sending signals to our community that we can be different and we can stand united. But what I've noticed is that Christians, they grew up with this deep sense that that kind of work is just wrong. That kind of work is unfaithful to Jesus. And then what happens is, as you alluded earlier, is that people come along with a few bullying statements and say, well, you know, the Bible says this, the Bible says that. I've been bullied that way many times. And I realized that we have to help Christians recognize Christian faithful motivations to know and work with and publicly honor and learn from and build a better community with people of diverse cultures and traditions and socioeconomic situations and life circumstances and so on. And that, and what I found in engaging around the book is that Christians kind of begin to stand up a little bit taller and say, okay, so Jesus did it. So it's okay that we do it. It's not only okay. It's really important because we have a choice right now. The choice is, are we going to stand together for our common humanity or are we going to fall apart? And there's lots of forces out there that are telling us, you know, that we can't get along. That's nonsense. We, the people in this nation, can build a more perfect union. We can recognize each other's humanity. And in fact, as we do that, we become more connected to our own. And we'll find that it's a blessing to us as well as to others.
I'm also wondering about the anger of many young people directed toward traditional religion and their refusal to engage in it. Do you think this could address both of those problems? And I know, being an interfaith, you definitely have a perspective in terms of how that doesn't somehow draw you away from your tradition.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is that all wisdom traditions have some work to do, and Christianity has a ton of work to do, to look at the impact of what our teachings have been, to look at the impact of our actions, and to look at the impact of who we've related to or not related to, who we've stayed separate from. And so I do hope that this kind of work will help people to look at Christianity in a different way. But I think that what those folk are asking for, quite rightly, is different behavior, not different words. And so I think that this is a time when I experienced this many times in the last 10 years. I've had people walk up to me and say, you know, if Christianity was more like what you talked about today, I might be interested in participating. But I want to be clear for myself as the Executive Director of Paths to Understanding and as a Christian, I'm just as happy for them to be atheist and a conscientious person who cares about other people and has a deep set of values. I'd rather have them be, I'd be just as happy to have them be Muslim or Jewish or Hindu or Sikh or part of an indigenous tradition. Like, I don't really care, because what I tell people all the time is, I don't care what you believe or don't believe. And many Christians get really anxious when I say that, but I say, I really don't care what you believe. But when your neighbor needs you, when your community needs you, are you willing to risk yourself in that moment for your neighbor and your community? If you're willing to do that, then I'm happy to work with you. And then what I say to Christians who say, well, I've never thought that way, I've never believed that way, I say to them too, I don't care what you believe. What I want to know is, when your neighbor needs you, when your community needs you, are you willing to risk yourself, your status, your money, your time, to even be vulnerable in relationship? Are you willing to do that? If that's the case, then let's work together and we can talk about what we believe later. And so when people see each other as human beings, we begin to like say, hey, you know, we're not as divided as we think we are. Mm-hmm. Those people are not as different from me as I thought. And we're trying to provide as an organization a set of experiences that will then help them begin to grow from those experiences into a partnering between different communities. Because mm-hmm. we don't always see and honor and celebrate all the good that people do. Mm-hmm. And we can't do that unless we're in a relationship. And as that happens, you know, I think we're going to hear more of those sighs, more of those, oh, okay, you know, we can grow into our future together. And as my friend Kay Knott says, Vi Hilbert's prayer that we often read, we are better together.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a wonderful way to sum up this program. Terry, thank you so much and good luck on your continued good work. And thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Challenge 2.0.
If you've enjoyed this program, found our conversations to be informative, entertaining, and thought-provoking, and the vision inspiring of people from different backgrounds who can disagree without being disagreeable, perhaps you might consider supporting our program with a contribution. Your support will not only help our program continue, it will also support the broader efforts of Paths to Understanding, our supporting parent nonprofit organization.